On this episode of Still Loading, were game stories supposed to be this confusing? Hello everyone and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. It is another episode for the summer of PS2 or in the summer of PS2, and this week we are going to do a sequel of a game that I covered probably 3-ish years ago, and that is Metal Gear Solid 2. But I can't do this one alone, and with me today I have a guest and a good friend of mine who is also a podcaster. She is the host of the Monster, she's one of the co-hosts of Monster Madness, a monster movie, horror movie podcast, and The Apex and the Abyss, a true crime podcast. Erica Gwynn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Josh?
I cannot complain. It's a little late for, well, I guess it's not that late, but we're recording this late at night, so I'm a little wonky at the moment. Other than that, I'm good.
I'm always wonky, so it's all good.
So I asked everyone who I wanted on this whole summer project of mine, like, what are some of their favorite PS2 games? And you were one of the few people who put down Metal Gear Solid 2, surprisingly. I was honestly surprised there weren't more people. I think there was like a handful, like 3 or 4. But I've been meaning to have you on for such a long time, and I figured this would be a good game, considering you're a huge Metal Gear Solid fan.
I am indeed.
I figured this would be a good game to have you on. So what made you choose Metal Gear Solid? Like, what put that on the list for you?
It was the first game that just popped into my brain. Probably because growing up, that was the game that I played through the most. Just I would play it, beat it, play it again, and just always tried to actually get to 100% completion, and I was never able to.
It is, the Metal Gear games are notoriously fairly difficult, so I don't blame you for not completing it to, like, 100%ing it. But you did beat it, I assume, right?
I have beaten it quite a few times. I have indeed. It's actually the only one that I have. I mean, I've beaten the first one, but I've only beaten that one time, and I will never try to beat it again because it was so damn difficult that I rage quit multiple times. This one, I can probably close my eyes and beat it if I got into the flow of it again, because I haven't played it in a really long time, but I do recall it quite well.
Seriously, fuck that final fight in Metal Gear Solid 1. Liquid Snake, right? That fight is so difficult and so aggravating. Oh my god.
I have nightmares about it sometimes.
I don't blame you. this final fight, I didn't get to beat this game. Full disclosure, I was not able to beat this game in time for this episode, but I did, like, a couple years ago. I had gotten up past the first, well, this game's kind of broken up in a weird way. There is a prologue chapter called The Tanker, and then there's kind of the main story chapter, which is called The Plant. The plant chapter, and I made it up to the plant, and I believe I was right before the second boss, which is Fat Man. Never got to Fat Man, but I was in between that. I was getting close to where he would be at. I was getting up to that area, so that's where I left off.
Okay.
So I got a good sense of the gameplay, and the gameplay for the most part is pretty similar to the original Metal Gear Solid. Would you agree?
Yeah, honestly, I think the only difference, besides obviously the advanced graphics from PS1 to PS2, but Raiden's character can do like a flip when you run, and like you can hit like an action button and you can like jump downstairs to kind of make it go quicker. I think honestly that's the biggest difference.
I would also say they did add the first person mode into it for that you could
that too.
And they added, what was it? There's that freeze spray that helps defuse bombs and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, the coolant that you need to defuse the bombs and the shells, big shell.
And that actually leads me into like one of the things. I was looking up some little fun facts for this, and when Kojima started development for this game, he actually started writing this game shortly after the release of the first Metal Gear Solid. Like, I think it was like less than 8 months after the first Metal Gear Solid released, he started, or it was less than, I don't know how many months, but it was shortly after. It was like very short after the release. that he started writing this game. So the original Metal Gear Solid, when did that come out again? That came out in...
Oh my God, because it's the third Metal Gear game. I never remember.
Hold on, I have it. It's came out in 98. So he started
that late?
Yeah, it was a late PS1 game.
Wow, I thought it was way earlier than 98, but you know, whatever.
He started writing it in 98 as well. Like, he started writing it just a couple month or so afterwards.
Okay.
And considering that the Sons of Liberty game, this one that we're, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty, that came out in 2001. So he started writing that 3 years prior to the release, just about like 2.5.
I mean, the story alone, I can understand that, because looking back on the details of it, because I was real hazy, and even watching some gameplay and cutscenes and all that today, this story is so friggin' weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely... It goes a lot of different places you're not quite expecting it to go. And
yeah.
I was looking at it. You know what? I'm curious. I'm going to look this up real quick while we're talking. But one thing I noticed, I was watching cutscenes of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a like a super cut of all the different cutscenes throughout the game. It was about 5.5 hours long, which is just wild to me that there is that much time that you're not playing games.
Yeah, but here's what's funny is because I was watching like a full on normal difficulty, a not even like a quick playthrough, but just like a normal one. It was only 7 hours and 50 minutes. So you literally only have about, if you're just playing it and know where everything is and you're not really investigating too much stuff and like going too deep into the game, about 2 hours in gameplay without any cutscenes whatsoever. That's kind of nuts.
I'm looking at how long to beat. The average is 13 hours for the main story. So that, I mean, most likely that 8 hours one is because the guy knew exactly what he was doing, how to beat every boss, guy or girl, exactly what they were doing, how to beat every boss. But even so, 13-hour game, 5.5 hours of that is cutscenes or just a lot of it is like the little, I can't think of the little intercom, the communication thing.
The nanos, yeah.
So it's just crazy to me that it takes up that much space. So to start off, he gave, like we were talking about the first person mode and the freeze spray, he gave each member of the team a notebook and they were required to write one idea a day for the game, and the promising ideas would be tested into the game engine. So this was essentially a way, instead of it being just his vision, he would bring in a bunch of others to see what they could bring to the project. And two ideas that came from this were the freeze spray, which we were talking about, and then sidling along the wall, which I could have sworn that was in the first game, but
no, that was in the first game. And like, you can knock, because that's like how you
But like, I guess so. I don't know. He said it said sidling on the wall, the thing that I found that I saw, and I'm like, I don't understand exactly what they're talking about then.
Maybe they mean like shimmying on like a ledge, because I don't recall doing that in the first one, and you do that a couple times in this one, and you hang off the edge as well of
that,
things, but
that
I don't
might
recall
be it
doing
then.
That.
This was also the first game in the series to use motion capture for its actors. Well, not for the voice actors, but for all the animation and rigging and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
And the composer of this game was Harry Gregson-Williams, and he was chosen because of his work with the movie The Replacement Killers, which I think that's a Chow Yun-Fat movie. Hold on, let me just double check. Yeah, The Replacement Killers has... What, get to the actor. Yeah, Chow Yun-Fat is in it, and Mira Sorvino is in it. Michael Rooker, too.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of people in it, but I was expecting this to be a John Woo movie because Chow Yun-Fat was in a ton of John Woo movies in the 90s and like late 80s. And I was thinking about it because there's a scene at the end where the fight's about to happen between Solidus Snake and Raiden, and a bunch of doves like fly off out the background, which is a very John Woo type of homage. But you know, Hideo Kojima is a huge movie fan, so he puts tons of homages into this. Another quick example, that there's a Titanic reference in this, because
Jack and Rose,
yeah.
I knew it because when I was doing the playback today, I'm like, okay, I don't remember what his real name is, and I was like, oh, Jack. And she's And he's like, oh, Rose? And I'm like, get the hell out of here. There should be no other couple out there in the world named Jack and Rose. It's been done by Cameron, all right? Move on.
That's what it was. But so, yeah, I mean, that's... I do have a couple others, but we'll kind of see how it's going to... Actually, this is actually a good one. I don't think this would fit in necessarily anywhere else. So the game came out shortly around the time, like shortly after 9/11. Mm-hmm. Actually, very close after 9. It came out 2 days afterwards.
Oh, shit.
November 13th. Well, they lucked out that they anticipated this because the original game, not anticipated 9/11. That sounded really bad out of context. But they noticed that that there's a lot of tension rising in the Middle East, and 6 months into development, so like pretty early on, they're like, we need to change this, because originally the game was going to take place in Iraq.
Oh.
And since the tensions in the Middle East were rising and 9/11 was just a couple of days before, it ended up like it prompted them to change. I forget exactly, this can't, I think this has to be a little crazy. Yeah, it was released on November 13th in North America and November 29th in Japan. So I don't know how much time they had to...
Well, they had two months because September 11th, so...
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm an idiot. I was thinking that was like 2 days after. For some reason, I was thinking November 13th, September 11th. Oh, yeah, they're like 2 days apart. No, okay, that makes a lot...
right here.
Yeah, significant changes to the game. This is from Wikipedia. Significant changes to the game's ending were made late in development following the September 11th attacks in New York, where the finale occurs, a sequence depicting Arsenal Gears displaced. Arsenal Gear is a big ship. We're going to get into that. Displacement of the Statue of Liberty and was crashing through half of Manhattan was removed.
Oh, well, that was a good call. Yeah. It would make sense why they had like that random ass montage of actual New Yorkers walking in New York at the end of it. I'm like, wait, why? What does this have to do with any... A lot of my rewatch of this, I said that a lot. I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? I'm like, I'm sure there's something, but I feel like I'm missing a lot. But I still love it.
And I mean, the story... Let's dive into the story then, because the story is kind of crazy, and like we were saying before, and on top of that, it had a lot of... There's a lot of stuff that Kojima talks about in this game that is eerily similar to what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole plot, it pretty much revolves around... There's a big... Everyone was expecting this to be another game where you played as Solid Snake, and it kind of twists... There was a twist early on, because you play as Solid Snake in that tanker chapter,
yep.
And then all of a sudden you're playing as this guy named Raiden in the plant chapter. Snake isn't gone from the game, but you're not playing as him anymore. So it really... A lot of people weren't too happy about that upon release. There's a podcast I listened to called Retronauts, and they were talking about... The one guy on the podcast, Bob, he was saying he worked at GameStop when this came out, and so many copies of this game were returned because people were pissed it wasn't Snake and that it was some other dude. And Raiden was kind of whiny and...
He was dumb.
I noticed that. Did you notice...
He's legit dumb. Okay, let me just break something down for you.
Go for it.
I am a huge fan of espionage. Not even just in real life, but like, I like espionage movies. I like games that involve espionage. One of my other favorite games is called Splinter Cell. I like when you are Black Ops. And you know what? To do that, you have to be highly intelligent and highly skilled in many different areas. This guy could barely goddamn swim, and he didn't understand basic human functions, it seemed like.
When I was watching the cutscenes for this, almost every time there was a heavy amount of exposition, he would just repeat it back to them as a question.
Yeah.
Almost single time. Huh? So it was like one of the big plot points is that like this thing called GW, which we'll get into. And he would like if someone said like it's this AI called GW and he goes, GW? Every single, like, it was always something like that. He would just repeat it back to them, but not, like, he didn't provide anything to the conversation. Everyone else was providing exposition, and he's just an idiot.
I legit don't know how he got that far, but just two other quick gripes. Not only is, you know, he's super stupid, but his girlfriend really annoyed me. I gotta be honest, because, number one, literally within the first, like, 5 minutes of you playing Raiden, whatever the hell his name is, Blondie Boy. First 5 minutes of playing him, the Colonel's like, hey, Rose, do us a favor. Call him by his code name. Do not use his real name because obviously we're in a Black Ops mission. The whole game, she's just like, Jack, Jack. I'm just like, way to keep a secret.
You do remember that she's not actually real, the person that's talking to her. Excuse me.
Wait, no, she's real? Wait, what?
No, she, the one that's talking to him isn't real, but the Rose is real, if that makes sense. You find out towards the end of the game that the Colonel and her are just an AI.
Oh my God, that's right.
And Rose does exist. I mean, I didn't get to finish my full rewatch, but like reading through a synopsis of it, Raiden does meet up with her. He reunites with the real Rose for the anniversary of their first meeting, whatever the fuck that means. I still have to watch that to understand what that context is. But
okay, that was my second gripe, actually. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Okay.
Because despite the fact that they may be AI in the nano machines that, when they're talking and all that shit, the man is literally in the middle of a life or death situation. And throughout the game, every so often, she's just like, hey, you remember what tomorrow is? And he's like, no, a little busy right now, trying not to die. And just she just keeps bringing it up. It's the day they met. Big whoop. The man might die and not make it to that day.
It's that there's so much like the characters are insane. But so let's the game starts off in with a tanker chapter, right?
Yes.
And opens in a flashback 2 years before, after the Shadow Moses incident. And the Shadow Moses incident is the entirety of the original Metal Gear Solid game from 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Solid Snake and Otacon, which that name always just bugged me. I get what it's going for. It's like a Transformers reference, kind of. Either that or it's a reference to Otaku, because I think Otacon is like an anime fan and Otaku is like Japanese for anime fan, I think. I forget. His name has something like that. Like Otacon, I just thought of like Decepticons or Autobots or something like that. But then Otacon also, I think, might be like Otaku or something.
You're not wrong.
I don't remember. I think he's an anime fan, right?
I think so, too. Yeah.
I think I remember that from the first game. Anyway, they're now members of a non-governmental organization just called Philanthropy, as generic as you can possibly get, and investigating the development of a new Metal Gear by the U.S. Marine Corps. So Snake arrives on a tanker transporting the weapon, and which happens to be in the middle of attack by a bunch of Russian mercenaries. And that's how the game starts.
Typical.
And another little like movie reference, when Snake is like on this raining bridge, he turns on camo and he's sprinting down the bridge, and then he jumps onto the barge, onto the tanker, and then because of the impact, it like in water and shit, it ruins his active camo. Mm-hmm. And as it's like causing sparks, and you see a shot of him getting up slowly, and it's sparks are all around him. And that was an homage to the Terminator movies, like Arnold Schwarzenegger getting up, well, naked, but yeah.
You know, I actually thought that when I was watching it. I had no idea that there were so many like hidden little Easter eggs referencing movies in this game at all, despite my enjoyment of playing it. I had no clue. And I actually thought that this morning. I'm like, oh, that's a Terminator shot if I ever saw one.
There's a lot of, a lot of the tidbits that I got were from the Did You Know Gaming YouTube video for this game. They had a whole video dedicated to just this game, not like the series, Metal Gear series, just this game.
Sure, so I'm gonna have to watch that.
There's some really good stuff. I didn't get all of it. I just kind of picked up some of the stuff that I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. One of the notes I wrote down watching it, though, is that the intro cinematic still holds up, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It still looks really good, though it did kind of bug me that Snake has his badass camo and then you see it and then it gets taken away from you before you get to do anything with it.
Yeah, I mean, because, okay, if you remember playing the first one, you have two options when you beat the game. Like, you can save Otacon or you can save Meryl. If you save Meryl, I believe you get unlimited ammo for your next playthrough. If you save Otacon, you get camo and stealth for the next playthrough. they bring both of those back in this game. So I thought that was kind of like nice. I'm like, oh, there's the stealth. But then you can't use it, obviously, because you're playing and they have to be able to see you and you have to fight all these, you know.
Otherwise, comrades. That would ruin the entire game if you could just walk around everybody.
Yeah, and I don't know if you got to the cutscene towards the end of the game. It's probably about an hour-ish before the game officially ends. Snake gives Raiden back all of his gear. This is jumping for a little bit, but they make a mention of like, oh, Raiden's like, do you need more ammo? Like, are you sure you can give me all this? He's like, and he points to his headband. He's like, unlimited ammo, I'm good. And it makes me crack up because like that's the thing. You would get this headband to wear, and if you wore it, you had unlimited ammo with your next playthrough after you beat the game. It's just cute little stuff.
Kojima, more than any other developer, I feel, is so good at attention to detail like that. Like, whether it's story beats, as ridiculous as they are, or hell, even just like little small interactive types of things. They talk about it on the Retronauts podcast, again, not to reference another podcast, but I don't want to steal their points without crediting them, at least. And they mention on that first level, a lot of people were blown away by the fact that like all the pots and pans you can interact with, like you can shoot them and they all do stuff like that. Like, that's an attention to detail thing that on a PS2 game you would not have had to do at all. On a PS4 game, I could, like, that's almost expected in a weird sense. But
yeah, if you can't interact with it, it's super lame.
But on PS2, that's fucking crazy because that's so far ahead of the time. Ahead of its time, excuse me.
Yeah, I can't honestly think of another game because, like, in this one, your enemies, like, the other people you're interacting with, they have a lot more feeling and emotion. Like, you can hold up people when you have a gun and they will shake, actually. If you hold them up for long enough, if you point the gun to their face, they'll whimper. If you point it to their crotch, they'll whimper, but nowhere else they will whimper, which is pretty funny. And they'll shake and they'll drop a dog tag every once in a while. That was like my big thing. I played this game so many times and I was always one dog tag short from getting 100% completion. I have no idea where that goddamn dog tag is. And
just play next time you play through it, do it with a walkthrough because you've earned it at that point.
You've earned it though. I have not, because if I earned it, I would have that dog tag.
All right. I mean, I'd say that you earned it because you've played the game through like four times, but
easily.
The way I always justify using a walkthrough is that if you can beat it once without a walkthrough, then you can go back through it with one to get everything. Because, like, I don't know about you, but I don't have the patience for, like, I don't want to spend like 40 minutes exploring an area just to find like a tiny pixel with a treasure on it. I'm thinking of Uncharted in that instance, but I don't know. But that's just, I get it's not nearly as like, quote unquote, honorable as doing it without a strategy guide, but meh. As long as I beat it, as credits rolled, I fucking beat it. That's my role. That's my
true. But like other things that you could like interact with too, that was different in this game, was pretty cool. Like you could shoot fire hydrants and it would explode and like kind of skew the view a little bit. A little Smith for you right there. You could shoot the walkie-talkie that was behind like an enemy soldier, and mm-hmm. it like if they went to go radio in, it wouldn't work and they would like shake it and they get really confused as to why their radio wasn't working. Just like random stuff like that I thought was really cool. And I again was thinking about that today. I'm like, wow, you really can kind of do a lot in this game that you typically couldn't do in like a PS2 game. Like other PS2 games that I love, I'm trying to think of, like, you know, Kingdom Hearts, and like there's like a couple Spider-Man games I found fun. You have like GTA. I was like, yeah, those are, you can interact with them, but like you could interact like pots and pans, like you said, you can do a lot in this game.
At the on the top of the plant on the of the plant level, you know, of the because it's a like a oil, it's a environmental cleanup facility called the Big Shell, and it almost looks like a drilling platform for off-sea oil or something like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it reminds me of. But up at the top of that, if you shoot a bunch of the birds, then Rose gets mad at you for killing birds.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's even like stuff like that. Like, hell, even in the original Metal Gear Solid, there is so many different ways that you could, like, there's so many different things that you could do in that game. Like, there is something you could do with the wolves in that game, and I can't remember what it was. Like, if you...
You can get them to love you.
Yeah, because I think if you, like, kill one and then wipe their blood on you or something like that, then they get the scent of themselves, and so they get them to love you type of thing. But you wouldn't know, like, the game doesn't tell you to do that. It's just Easter egg.
When you beat Sniper Wolf, you take her handkerchief with her scent on it, and if you equip it and then lay where the wolves are, all these hearts come up because they smell her and they think you're her, and then they love you and won't attack you anymore.
Oh, good memory. See, I knew there was something like that.
That was like my favorite part. It had dogs in it. Of course, I loved it. I was like, I want them to be my friends.
I also love that both, at least what I saw in this game and in the original Metal Gear Solid, is that they make you feel sympathy towards the bosses, towards the people you have to fight and kill. Which I always thought, like, all the bosses had such unique characters or character arcs or characteristics. I think this game went a little bit too crazy on, and that's saying something considering the first game had a ninja. But
And Psycho Mantis.
Did I tell you, I think I said it on the podcast for that episode, but I went to a convention and I got to get the autograph on my Metal Gear Solid manual of Psycho Mantis.
No, I did not know that. Yes, also, that episode is really old, so I don't recall, but I'm sure you mentioned it.
I don't know if I had it at the time, but I do. I have that autograph. He was at a convention, and he was there because he's done... I think he was on a 80s show called Mask, which was like, it was an acronym. I forget what the acronym stands for, but it was like kind of in that same vein as like G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Oh,
MASH?
Is that MASH, what you mean?
Mask, not MASH.
Oh, MASH.
Not MASH.
Okay. I was like, oh.
Mask.
I was like, MASH is an old show. How old is this guy?
No. It was a 1985 to 86 series, so yeah. And it was kind of like... Oh my gosh, it's one of those cartoons that's based off of toy lines, just like, you know, He-Man and G.I. Joe and all that other stuff. I just forget what MASC stands for. It's, the Mobile Armored Strike Command, but command spelled with a K.
Oh, okay.
And I believe the voice actor, yeah, it was him. So the voice actor for a bunch of the characters, these characters' names are wild. Matt Tracker, Hondo McLean, Dusty Hayes, Bruce Sato. His name's Doug Stone. He's the voice of Psycho Mantis.
I think that was the one thing that this game was lacking that Metal Gear had. It was just like that. Psycho Mantis is genuinely terrifying to me.
Oh my God, yeah.
I do not. So, okay, I played and beat it when it came to PS3 for that HD, I think it was just those two games that they remastered them a little bit, and then
they actually ended up doing all of them, but they had one where it was just like those two, and they had another one where it was like all five or something like that.
Yeah, I have the first one, whatever was on that, because I remember it's four games. It's the two Metal Gears leading up to it, Metal Gear Solid that we all know, and then Metal Gear, you know, Sons of Liberty. But
Sorry, go on.
No, you're good. No, I remember even before that. Because my childhood growing up, I typically just watched my brother play video games because he was kind of like, he had to beat the game, but then he would get super frustrated and then I would play it and usually beat the game. But there was like a handful of games that I never did that with. It was Resident Evil games because they would scare me too much, and Metal Gear Solid because I remember how involved it was to beat this game. Like, you had to unplug a controller and plug it into the other thing. And to beat this thing, I'm like... Who came up with that? Because that's, not only is it genius, but that's so complicated.
That's what I was saying. Like, Kojima does such a cool job of finding unique ways. I mean, don't get me wrong, I have issues with how much he devotes to cinematics and how much he devotes to, like, I think there's there has to be a more elegant way to tell the stories that he wants to tell. It's weird. It's almost like he's a movie director who decided to make a game, not the other way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's a movie director that literally just wanted to only have to deal with people reading his words, and he kind of just had creative control over every other aspect, which is totally fine.
But at the same time, like you were just saying, he had so many unique gameplay ideas that you just don't see it. So it's very strange that the way he treats games, it's almost like a movie director who wanted to make video games, but at the same time, then he comes up with crazy ideas like Psycho Mantis, or each of the bosses have really interesting mechanics, and like even just with this game, it's probably the most memorable boss of the game, but Fat Man. He's this big dude in a bomb suit on rollerblades, and he's just rollerblading around the side up on the roof of this plant, and it's just, I don't understand it. I don't understand what would cause
someone to take out your enemies.
Yeah, this is a good idea.
If you're going to take out your enemies, you might as well be on rollerblades.
I mean, do it in style.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so insane.
Yeah, I felt like he went a little, like, if I look at the scope of his games, like Metal Gear Solid, this one, then Snake Eater, I don't ever think I played the fourth one. I gotta be honest with you. I know I played
that one has like the most cutscenes out of all of them. The fourth one.
Yeah, I can't even recall what it's called because I know I have the fifth one.
Guns of the Patriots.
Yeah, no, I don't. I've never even seen a thing of that, just because I don't know. I don't even know how that kind of slipped through the cracks, but it did. But for just my knowledge alone, I feel like this game is the weirdest of them all when it comes to like the bosses. Not even so much so. I mean, I think Vamp is a really stupid boss. I think that was kind of just like tossed in there. I didn't really get it in the flow of everything. Like, oh yeah, there's this guy that has vampire quote unquote attributes. Like, dude, sucking blood out of people's necks. You're a vampire. And he's like throwing like energy balls, it looks like, at me and all this other stuff. But like there was Fortune, who you felt bad for Fortune, that boss.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of felt bad.
You don't
for
even
her.
Really get to fight her. Like she
gets
killed. You have
one fight with her, yeah.
And you're just supposed to dodge the whole time.
Yeah, you can't do shit in that fight except dodge. And then you have Fat Man, which is a really fun boss fight, which that's probably my favorite one because it's just fun. He's rolling around on rollerblades, this very large man, and he's just planting bombs randomly. Like, it's very complicated. And then you just shoot him in the head and he's done.
And you have to freeze the bombs, right?
You have to freeze the bombs,
then shoot him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, Metal Gear Solid 4 has 90-minute cutscenes.
That would be a freaking hard cast for me.
It's a whole movie. It's a whole movie, and I don't understand how you can justify that sometimes. Like, and I don't have a single issue with Kojima. He's done so many great things for the game industry, and he's done many like crazy cool things. But there's certain elements for me that just turn into a hard pass. Like when I see there's a 90-minute cutscene, I'm like, just give me a fucking Metal Gear movie. Just don't make
that's,
a game.
Yeah,
just
that,
make
that
a movie.
That would have been my comment. I was just about to say that. Like, if you're gonna go that far, just make a movie.
I did look up.
Don't make that game and just completely redo the first two games so I can play them on my PS4. Please.
The first two Metal Gear Solid games or the first two Metal Gear games?
The first four Metal Gears, then.
The HD remake that you have should have that. So I looked up what it was on it. The HD remake had the original Metal Gear 1 and 2, like the ones that were in Japan that were not dumbed down for the American audiences.
I want what they did with Final Fantasy VII. For my games, for those.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'll just
not
take
just
two
an
and
HD
three.
Port, like a full on nice remake of the older games.
At least give me a full on remake of the first. Oh, not the first one. The Metal Gear Solid. Just give me that one. Come on, because I saw that. I don't even know if it was him that put it out or if it was like a fan thing, but someone redid like the first cutscene. In what it would look like as a PS4 game, like completely remastered, and it was so beautiful, and I was so excited. Like, just I understand it takes time. I'm willing to wait, and I will pay the $60 to $80, most likely, to play said game.
If Konami ever decides to get their head out of their ass, of course. Yeah. They, that fact, and they also, Kojima doesn't work for them anymore, unfortunately.
I
so
know, I heard that.
The chance of Kojima working on another Metal Gear Solid game is slim to none. I think he's also ready to put it behind him, since he's been working on just that series for, like, 30 years now, I think. Because the original Metal Gear that he created came out in 1987, so 97, 07, over 30 years. It would have been, because 2017 would have been 30 years from the original game.
Yeah, but I get that people want to move on, but just think of this one fan that lives in Pennsylvania that just really wants this game.
Konami could probably do with the money, though, man. Like, they wouldn't even, if they don't change anything and they just do, if they don't change the story and they just do a full update and just maybe tinker with the gameplay a little bit, like, because you can't, when you do a remake like that, like, you have to update the gameplay for modern sensibilities. I mean, I haven't played the Final 7 remake, it's in the mail, but I haven't played it yet.
Yeah,
but from what I've heard,
it's totally different, like, gameplay wise,
but it works because they took enough care from everything I've heard, they did enough care to the gameplay to not take away from everything else.
I would 100% agree with that statement, because I've played it. I'd probably say I put in about 3 hours into it, just kind of just not even like full on just gameplay, just kind of messing around, because I just kind of love exploring that like open world thing. So it's been a blast to kind of just be Cloud. It's just fun.
It's been. Sorry. I just went into a little bit of Bare Naked Ladies there.
You just insert like a song clip right there.
Yeah, it's been or the Weird Al version.
There's a Weird Al version?
Oh my god.
I must live under a rock.
It's older now, but it's I forget what it's called. Hold on, I'll look it up quick. It's wild though. Hold on. Weird Al.
My Weird Al knowledge is very slim. I know he did a parody song about Star Wars that I hum every once in a while, but that's about it. Bye bye.
Okay.
Sky.
It's from his album Running with Scissors, and it's called Jerry Springer.
Oh dear God!
I listened to that album a lot, and it was like, I think the lyrics were something like, "It's been 1 week since we got to see cheap lovers and cousins that marry. 5 days since they had the brawl with the hermaphrodite, the slut, and the crackhead. 3 days since we heard the tale about the guy who learned his woman was a she-male." So some of the language might not be appropriate anymore, but granted that was also how old was that album? 1999.
So
it's been over 20 years.
Yeah, different times, man.
But that's the album that has the Star Wars one that you were just talking about, the Anakin, the American Pie parody.
Oh, so good. Bye, Mr. Anakin Sky.
Well, it was I forget what the lyrics. Anyway, back to Metal Gear Solid.
Yes, and we're back.
So we were talking about the tanker mission, and we kind of went off on a tangent from there. Just to surmise the prologue chapter, the tanker chapter, Snake goes to look into the development of this new Metal Gear by the United States Marine Corps, because the whole mission of his new organization with Otacon is to get rid of Metal Gear. Like, they don't want any Metal Gears in the world because it's too easy for nukes to go off, type of thing.
Yep.
And basically what happens is he goes into the tanker at the same time Russian mercenaries are attacking the tanker, and also led by this guy named Colonel Gerlukovich, I can't say it, and his daughter Olga. And Snake's enemy from the first game, from the first Metal Gear Solid, Revolver Ocelot.
Mm-hmm.
After Snake encounters Olga and Gerlukovich and the Marine commander, before detonating explosives, basically Ocelot steals the Metal Gear that's in there. Snake tries to confront him. But upon seeing him, Ocelot becomes possessed by Liquid Snake, and they don't really explain why yet. They explain later, because Liquid Snake was the villain of the first game, and he escapes in the Ray. leaving the ship to sink. And in the aftermath, the official story is that Snake is the one that did it. He's blamed for the disaster. So he went from hero in Shadow Moses now to being the villain.
Hero to zero. It's a common tale.
So 2 years later, the president of the United States with the most uncommon name of all time, James Johnson, gets kidnapped and captured at a environmental cleanup facility called the Big Shell, which we were talking about before. It kind of looks like an offshore drilling site type of thing. Yeah. And this new character that you haven't met before named Raiden is tasked with going in and rescuing the president. And it's very much like, it's once again, here's another homage to a movie. It's an homage to John Carpenter's Escape from New York, because know what Snake's code name is in this? Lieutenant Plissken. And Kurt Russell's character in that movie, I know you already know this, Erica, but for the listeners, Snake Plissken. That's a good movie, man.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
I really enjoy that movie. Know what John Carpenter movie I saw really recently, actually, for the first time? The Thing.
Oh, look at you go, man. Another Kurt Russell right there.
That movie was tough to watch, and not in a bad way. It was just very gory.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have asked me, I would have been like, Josh, just to prepare you.
No, someone told me. Someone told me about it.
Okay, good.
I have a friend named Diego, and he's a big movie guy as well. And he makes his own movies. Like, he went to film school and stuff like that. Like, he's a cineast. Is that what the cinephile, whatever you want to call it?
Cinephile, yeah.
He's really big into it. So he was recommending it to me for a while, and I finally sat down and watched it. It's good. It's definitely very good.
Oh, yeah, it's a good movie.
But it's just very, those practical effects are amazing and horrifying all at the same time. So that is the prologue chapter, the tank of Snake getting blamed and the new Metal Gear Ray getting taken by Revolver Ocelot, who was just possessed by the villain of the last game. Because, you know, reasons.
Yeah.
2 years later, you know, Raiden is going to rescue the president. And that's where everything just kind of goes crazy. This game covers a lot of ground very fast, and then it has a lot of nothing. So what I thought was interesting is if you're looking on the synopsis on Wikipedia, right?
Yeah.
The moment where Raiden meets the president is the second paragraph. He goes, as he searches for the president, Raiden begins to question Plissken's identity, because clearly it's Snake. They just hide it from you for reasons. But agrees to the plan of transporting hostages off the Big Shell with a helicopter. And where are you at? It's in the second paragraph where Plissken reveals that he's the real Solid Snake because another guy is impersonating him. Helps Raiden locate the president. When he finally reaches the president, Johnson claims, and we'll get into because the moment he meets the president is where shit goes crazy in terms of the plot. Like, everything, for the most part, you have weird characters, but up until Raiden meets the president, you're, you know, trying to rescue the hostages on the Big Shell. You're trying to rescue the president on the Big Shell. And there's some guy that claiming to be Solid Snake who's running the whole thing. You find out his name is Liquidus Snake. No, Solidus Snake, excuse me. Solidus Snake. I'm getting the two bosses confused. Solidus Snake, and the real Snake is the guy who's been helping you the whole time, named Plissken.
Dun, dun, dun.
So everything up until that makes sense. It's pretty linear, I should say. What I found funny is that there's a total of 7 paragraphs of a synopsis. Granted, 2 of the paragraphs are like 2 lines, but still, 7 paragraphs. You get to the president, midway through the second paragraph. That's 2.5 hours into that 5 hour long Metal Gear Solid movie I was watching on YouTube,
which is about 9 hours of slow gameplay.
And I'm just like looking at this. I'm like, we are so early in the story, and yet we're 2.5 hours. We're halfway through the cutscenes, but we're so early in the game. And in my head, I'm like, they just crammed so much shit in the back half of this game.
Mm-hmm. They really did.
What do you, like, how much of this of the plot do you remember? I have it in front of me, but I feel like if I just keep talking, then that's going to be kind of boring to everyone. So
no, I mean, I remember a good bit. Obviously, I remember the first part the best with at the tanker with Snake. Because, you know, that's the most exciting part. You're like, oh, yeah, you're back as Snake again. And then all of a sudden, you are literally a character that is the polar opposite of Snake. He's dumb. Mm-hmm. He's blonde. He has no facial hair whatsoever. And he is not sassy and like a curmudgeon like Snake is. So you literally are playing the complete opposite. But before I get into like what I remember, did you find it weird that the president's first reaction to seeing Raiden was to, like, it seemed like ball tap him, and then he was shocked that he was a dude. Did you notice that in that cutscene? He, like, goes to, like, I'm like, okay, so if that was a girl, what were you trying to do?
Well, so Raiden was kind of created, like, there's, I guess the president was thinking, like, is he just, like a soldier that was created in a lab type of thing, not necessarily like a human that was turned into a soldier. That's the only thing I can think of, but he wasn't. And I guess maybe just the president didn't know that, or
he was just shocked. It was just a weird, might as well be a movie. This game was filled with a lot of oddities. That would be one of them. But no, I mean, obviously you get, you're this new, espionage person. It's your first mission. You got an annoying girlfriend that keeps asking you what's going to happen tomorrow. You're trying to, you know, save the president's life along the way. You meet up with this guy, Pete, who is an NYPD, you know, officer of some sort, like bomb dismantler. Can't think of the correct terminology for that. Don't come for me.
Stillman, I think is his name.
Yeah. Peter Stillman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you run into Snake and all this other stuff. And what, like, I found really enjoyable while playing this game is why I like it probably so much is because it does obviously it pays a lot of homages to movies that I didn't even realize, but it pays a lot of, like, respects to the very first game. Like, there's a lot of parallels, like, music cues and just scenes in general. Like, in the first Metal Gear, there's that infamous scene where Snake walks down a hallway and Gray Fox had just literally, like, slaughtered a bunch of people and there's just, like, blood all over the walls and they stay that way throughout the whole game. And you kind of have a similar situation here where there's just blood everywhere, but you don't know who did it. And it turns out to be Vamp, one of the bosses, this vampire type character. Mm-hmm. So you have that. I'm trying to think.
Well, that was done by literal design because there's a plot twist at the end of the game that says that it was meant to be that way.
Really?
Yeah, so
Maybe I'm forgetting because I don't recall. The beginning, like, three quarters of it are super fresh, but then when we get towards the end, I'm a little bit more fuzzy.
There's so much plot in the last half.
It's
so,
a lot. It's a lot.
So Let's see how well we can break this down, because reading off the Wikipedia would be boring and it would take forever. But essentially, once Raiden meets President Johnson, you find out that President Johnson is merely a figurehead, and there's actually a group of men that run the entirety of the U.S. and they're just called the Patriots. It's a group of 12 men. And that the democratic process is a sham, and it's all staged by this secret organization to make people feel in control of the country when they actually aren't. Mm-hmm. Very definitely tweaking a lot of insecurities that Americans are feeling right now, at least. I'm not going to claim that that's something that it's actually happening, but that is something that you could totally picture happening, which is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And that the big shell, and, like, furthermore, the big shell that you're on is actually just a facility to create a new Metal Gear called Arsenal Gear. And the whole big shell that you're on, like this big offshore drilling looking, like a type looking thing, is just meant to disguise the fact that Arsenal Gear is being made underneath it.
Yeah.
And what Arsenal gear mainly is, it does have weapons like nuclear weapons, and like it's a big, as it's described here on Wikipedia, it's a massive submersible strike fortress or mobile fortress. Mm-hmm. But it also houses a super powerful AI called GW, which is that a shot at the president at the time? Do you think?
It might be. It might
be. I could totally see that with Kojima, with his political commentary. But essentially, the purpose of this AI is that it's going to censor and control the flow of information to the masses. That is a little bit too close to home for how everything is now.
A little bit.
That is a little terrifying, because even if it's not, even if governments or like evil corporations, like I know there's corporations that do have a say in like what we see, but like even if it's not to the extent that this game theorizes, the fact that our news stations now have slants, whether it's left-leaning or right-leaning, is just fucking terrifying. And it's kind of leading into what they're talking about here about controlling the flow of information to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And you find it out in the previous game, but like Solid Snake is a clone of this, of the leader of his original group called, his name is just Big Boss. You don't really know much about Big Boss in through these games. You find out more as the series goes on, but Snake is not the only clone. There's Solidus Snake, who is the villain of this game, and because he was the guy that was impersonating Snake earlier on.
Yep.
There was Liquid Snake, who's the villain of the last game, and I'm sure there's others that I don't know, because I have not made it to the end of the series yet. Excuse me.
Yeah, same. So.
So there's a lot that I don't know yet.
And there's a lot to digest.
There is. And so the president reveals that the Sons of Liberty predecessor as president, like the figurehead, was actually Solidus Snake. But once Solidus Snake started going rogue, they put him into place, Mr. James Johnson.
Yep.
And that's like where the plot twist starts. And there is literally just paragraphs more. But it's wild. Like, and the reason, well, I'm going to try to just jump, because if I went through everything, it would just be, it's like trying to explain something. It's like trying to explain every single like beat of a movie without actually seeing the movie, you know? It just would make it so confusing.
Sure.
But to bring it back to what you're saying, how it's so similar to the first game, the reason why that was by design is that they reveal that everything that's been happening on the plant chapter, in this plant, is because the Patriots set the whole thing up. They wanted to essentially find a way to recreate another Solid Snake, a perfect soldier, which is supposed to be Raiden.
That's right. And now it's coming back.
And all of the different people, like the bosses that you all fought, like Vamp that you mentioned before, you also have Fortune, you have you have Fat Man, all those different bosses, they are direct parallels to the Foxhound group, who are the set of bosses in the first game.
Oh shit! Yeah, I guess Fat Man and Raven might be, I guess, parallel to each other.
I don't know if like necessarily it's 100%. Like, it's not exactly a 1-to-1 parallel, but it's the idea that, you know, you're sneaking into this compound, and because I think there's the DARPA chief in the first game, and you have the president in this one.
Yeah, and when you that was like kind of referring back to like, oh, like certain music cues kind of referring back to the first one, is when you get to the president the first time, or like you see him, you lean up against a wall, and like there's this little like change in the music, and that was like directly the same change when you saw Meryl for the first time, or when you saw the president in that game the first time. And even the way you get into the room with him, I think, is the same, because like Raiden gets up on this like little platform, and he shoots like kind of like a missile that you can control through like the vents and all this, and it explodes, you know, like the security door or whatever to allow you in. You do something similar in Metal Gear Solid, if I do recall, because I remember sucking at it really badly, constantly blowing up my missile.
Wait, which one was this again? Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that, like, in both games, they have the same, like, you have this, like, you have, like, projectile that you control to blow up, like, some security thing. That it's in both games. But it was just, like, this cute little thing, because in the first one, I remember seeing it for the or like seeing the whole playthrough for the first time and like being heartbroken with along the Meryl storyline. So there, mm-hmm. this one music cue always like reminds me of it, and they used it only one time, I believe, in this entire game, and I was just like, you got like kind of like a sad little harumph out of me when I heard it again.
See, I've only played the first game once, so it was I didn't actually get to replay this game didn't get to beat this game all the way through. So I didn't get to hear a lot of those like musical tinges that you're talking about, musical homages, I guess.
That's what I'm here for.
I'm trying to think, because the next thing I wanted to mention was that in terms of the plot is that basically more shit happens, and then the Arsenal gear crashes into downtown Manhattan, still crashes into New York, but before they remade a bunch of stuff, it was supposed to crash through the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Which you can see why they would get rid of that, considering it came out 2 months after 9/11.
For sure.
So it crashes down into downtown Manhattan. And during all that stuff, one of the points, like, you know, after you find out what GW is and like what how this is like a snake simulation type of thing, they did upload a virus to the AI, and they couldn't upload the full thing, but it does get to start to eat away at the AI bit by bit, which is how you find out later on that the Colonel and Rose aren't actually people, they're just the AI talking to him, trying to manipulate him.
Yeah.
Because they start to kind of like they get more glitchy, and it's harder for, and he's starting to be weirded out by it.
Yeah, I always enjoy that, because like in these games, they always kind of break the fourth wall a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, I have unlimited ammo, I'm totally fine. But then you have the Colonel when he's glitching. I remember him keep saying, "Just turn off the game. Just turn off the game. Like, this is all fake. That's why it's cool. You can just turn off the game." Like, stuff like that. I'm like, this shit is so unsettling sometimes.
They also, I noticed they do this a little bit, but the whole implicit thing with games is that they are nothing but manipulation machines for players. Obviously, yeah. it's pure innocent manipulation, but it's manipulation nonetheless. So they kind of touch on it a little bit, where it's like they talk about what all the stuff that Raiden has done. It's like, you chose to do this, or like we like tricked you into doing it. And technically, with every like a good game developer will get you to do something without you realizing that they nudged you along with that. They guide you along this path in order to figure something out. So it's interesting, because they kind of it don't really guide your opinions or your thoughts or your ideologies or anything like that, but they do guide your decision making within the context of the game. So it's kind of funny to see them talking about it in this in a kind of a nebulous sense, and it makes you a little uncomfortable, because then it makes me start thinking, like, how easily manipulated am I?
This is getting deep, man.
I know, right? Bioshock Infinite, the original Bioshock does stuff like that too. Have you played that one?
Okay, truth time. I have played probably like an hour of that game, but it scares me.
Fair enough. It is the big daddies in that game are terrifying, and plus like the splicers are very creepy.
I have so many games that I want to beat, but I get so unsettled and so creeped out so easily for someone who hosts a horror movie podcast and reads horror, watches horror all the time. The game, when I have to control what's happening, I get like so seized up. I'm like, I can't do it. It's like I was telling you off mic, I've been playing The Last of Us because I want to beat the damn game eventually. And I have to stop after a while, because I'm like, these zombies are the worst. They are horrifying. I can't do it. I'm just a chicken shit, man.
Well, and that game is like ridiculously depressing.
A little bit.
That game is so hard, especially like there's a podcast. I'm a little behind on them, but I actually ran a promo for them, and they ran one for me called the Online Warriors podcast. And one of their hosts was talking about, they were playing through Last of Us, and they were talking about how it was probably not the best time to, because it was in the midst of all this that's going on. So all the parallels between this virus that's turning people into these fungal zombies, and then you have the coronavirus here, it just was freaking them out real bad.
Yeah, I think that kind of like put a damper on it for me too. I'm like, I don't need this on top of everything. Though I have been like doing a rewatch of The Walking Dead, which I'm sure you do not watch whatsoever.
I just have no interest. It's not even like scary. Like, I don't mind zombie stuff. I'm just over zombies.
Yeah, I was for years. I just had no interest whatsoever. I have two very large collections of The Walking Dead comics that I've kind of read here and there. But the show, I was just like... It was one of those things that got so hyped up. It's like, F yeah, zombies. Gonna get all the zombies. I'm just like, all right, I'm sick of zombies right now. Give me something different. And since I've taken like a couple year break, I'm going back and I'm like, actually, this show is really goddamn good. And like, I get why people still really dig it. Now, I'm nowhere near caught up. But even while I'm watching it, I'm kind of like, I really hope the world doesn't turn out like this. But I am kind of slightly more prepared after watching this a little bit.
I guess so. I don't know how to bring that back. We got to right the ship here. I was trying to think, without giving you any spoilers for Bioshock, because I assume you want to play it at some point.
Yeah, but even if you told me, I most likely would forget.
So you don't care if I spoil the ending?
No, go ahead.
The big plot twist?
Go ahead.
Okay. Spoiler alert for everyone else who's not played Bioshock. It is worth it to play it, so just... earmuffs for like 30 seconds. The end of the game, you go through this whole, you go through the underwater city of Rapture, and you are told, you're guided along by this guy named this guy named Atlas, and he's telling you about this person, the guy who created Rapture. His name is Andrew Ryan, is this evil person, and you need to get to him and take him down type of thing. And as you're playing through the game, you hear these audio journal entries from the citizens of Rapture. Maybe some of them have turned crazy and displacers. Maybe some of them are dead. But you keep hearing about this guy named Frank Fontaine, who kind of is like a guy who led a grassroots uprising against Andrew Ryan. And you make it all the way up to Andrew Ryan's office, and you find out that you were actually... you were essentially not a clone, but you were essentially like bioengineered, and that you were mentally conditioned to respond to certain commands. And one of them is, would you kindly? And so they replay every time Atlas says, would you kindly? And you find out Atlas was actually Frank Fontaine the whole time, the guy who started the grassroots uprising. And they replay all of his commands that he gave you. Doesn't sound like commands. He just says, would you kindly go do this? Would you kindly go do that? And you find out that like anytime he says, would you kindly, then you just feel compelled to do what he asked you right after that. And you beat Andrew Ryan to death with a wrench, and he's just screaming at you. A man chooses, a slave obeys, as you're beating him to death with a wrench.
Oh, shit.
It is fucking awesome. It is like, oh, well, not that I feel bad for Andrew Ryan, but he's like, that game is, I need to do a whole episode on that, because that is like, that's one of my favorite games because of how much symbolism is done. It's a big dissection of Ayn Randian philosophies and shit like that.
Look at you, man. You're getting so deep on this show anymore.
I like having these kinds of conversations. I think that games warrant this type of thing. Like, I like to have all the silly ones too. I mean, you've heard some of the goofy shit that we talk about, but at the same time, I also want to be able to make it so it's like you have these in-depth conversations about games that warrant it. And games like this, like, I try to keep a lot of the current politics out of this one because I don't want to draw too many parallels for Metal Gear Solid 2, but it had to be taught, like, you know, spoken on at least a little bit, just because there are so many parallels that are within this game, and that's what's happening now, which is just wild. It's just crazy. But
I mean, art will always imitate life, so,
and vice versa sometimes too, unfortunately, because sometimes people get bad ideas from art. Not all the time. But with this, you find out that, just kind of like another plot twist to add to the numerous plot twists about like who Raiden is, you find out that the S3 plan, which we thought before was Solid Snake Simulation, actually stands for Selection for Societal Sanity. And it's a protocol that's real purpose is to create a method for controlling human behavior behavior and thought in order to prevent society from dumbing down in the digital era due to overflow of trivial information, drowning out the valuable knowledge and inconvenient truths.
Say that three times fast.
Right? I mean, I read that little bit off the Wikipedia page, if you all couldn't tell because it sounded scripted. But it the whole purpose of it is to make sure that people... I mean, when it said the dumbing down of human behavior, like humans, I was like, well, that's a good thing, right? But then it's also trying to control and manipulate humans to doing whatever the Patriots want.
Yeah.
Which is just, yeah, terrifying. But this game is just, it just fucking goes places. Like, it starts off with just a simple rescue. It's like, take Escape from New York and then throw in House of Cards at the end.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, it did get a lot... Like, the more I... Because when I played this originally, I was, like, a young kid. I probably... My sponge of a brain was not as spongy. I was not really kind of soaking in everything that was being said. But as I was kind of going back and watching things today, I'm like, shit is pretty heavy for a game. And it's so twisty, and it just keeps getting escalating more and more. But I still really enjoy it.
I liked what I did play of it. Like I said, I didn't beat it, but I did really enjoy what I played of it. The first Metal Gear Solid, I played it for the first time back in 2016 or 2017 or something like that. I think 2016. And it really made a big impact on me, and I was surprised because it's, you know, at that point it was nearly a 20-year-old game.
Yeah.
But the way the gameplay held up surprisingly well, despite and even the controls weren't so bad, and both in the original and this, it's more or less like the style of gameplay isn't always my favorite, because I find myself fighting the camera. Like, I don't fight the camera, but the camera angle just makes it harder in a sense. I don't know, like, just in general, like the style of game, of the actual gameplay in this, it's I have to be in a specific mood for it, because I do enjoy it, but I have to be in a very specific mood to play it, I think.
No, I get that. Yeah, no, I get that.
But you're right. Like, this game, it's heavy. It's really heavy. There's even a line where they talk, like, the damaged AI, like, after they reveal, like, Raiden knows that it's just an AI. He knows it's not the Colonel and it's not Rose. They talk about how, like, you aren't who you think you are. Like, your memories aren't your own. Like, we gave you these memories, and you're choosing to believe them, and blah blah blah. Like, do you really remember who you were before this, and this and that? And then Snake, at the end of the game, once you beat Solidus, he puts his arm around Raiden, like it's like his dad or something like that, and he goes, and he basically just kind of gives him a little bit of a pep talk. He's like, it doesn't matter whether those memories are real or not, because you're making them real to you, or something like that.
And yeah,
it's just, it's wild. It just, oh my god.
Yeah, because the game itself kind of like sandbags you a lot, because it's, how do I explain this? Because you always refer back to the original when you're talking about this game, because it was so iconic, and you were attached to the storyline and Snake and all that. And then you have to become attached to this whole new character. And, like, I'll be honest, I wasn't as attached to Raiden as I was Snake. But, like, Snake's little gems and stuff like that, and, like, his kind of, like, big brother sense and his, like, words of wisdom, I always remember them being like, that's why I love this character. Because he's kind of a dick, but he knows what he's talking about. Like, at all times.
I interpreted it more as like I didn't think of him as a dick, because I feel like he just, I mean, maybe he is, I don't know. I never got that sense, but like, he has every right to be cynical, but he still finds a way he still has this ideology, like, we're going to find a way to make this work for the betterment of humanity.
Oh yeah. And I'll call him a justifiable dick.
Fair enough. I just, Snake is just such a fun character, because he has that stereotypical almost Vin Diesel voice from like Fast and Furious, but yeah, you know, before Fast and Furious, he almost has that kind of like gruff tough guy voice, But then when you actually see, like, he solves problems, it's not just, let me just beat it with my fist. Let's try to figure this out and just try to solve it with our minds and then use brute force as necessary type of thing. Yeah. So he's just a really interesting character in general, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he uses his brain, unlike Raiden.
Just repeats everything back to everybody else.
Yeah.
All right, so we kind of went, we meandered through that story. I mean, it's a complex story. Like, there's no way we're going to be able to explain everything that happens in an hour. Well, we're at hour 10 right now, but
it's too complex to actually go shot for shot with it, because it makes no sense unless you know things from the first game and the whole history of Metal Gear. Like, you honestly have to play it to really understand the complexity of the story.
Oh, 100%. 100%. There's no way.
I've played that game a bunch of times and there's still shit I barely understand. I'm like, wait, what?
It's because Kojima, I think, is an excellent writer in a sense. Like, his dialogue's actually pretty good. His story beats are pretty good. But he suffers a little bit from what I call, from what I describe as, the George Lucas syndrome. In the sense, it's nowhere near as bad as Lucas. I'm not comparing it, but, George Lucas, if you look at those prequels that everyone shits on, if you look at those plot points, I actually think they're pretty good plot points. I think the actual progression of the story that he chooses with all the different elements that he chooses is really interesting and really a really cool overall story. But when you get to the execution of it, it's not nearly as well done. Now, with that said, I'm not comparing Kojima's execution in this game to Lucas's execution in those prequels. Kojima is much better at writing dialogue than Lucas is. You're also comparing a movie to a game, but just in terms of when he chooses to have his exposition, we were just saying, he crammed over 2/3 of the story into the last third of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's why, a lot of that portion of the game is relatively hazy to me, because there's just so much that my brain couldn't take all of it. Like, I can tell you a lot about, just running through, Big Shell a bunch. But when it gets to the end and the 85 twists and, the whole child soldier aspect and the death of Hal's sister that we didn't even talk about because it was so inconsequential and random and nobody cares.
She's the one that uploaded the virus to the GW AI. But yeah, once again, but it's weird because they give her character in it too. There's a whole side story for her about how she's afraid to swim and why she's afraid to swim and shit like that.
Yeah, why her and Hal haven't talked and,
But then they kill her off, so it's then what's the point?
Exactly. That's why it's very forgettable. There's a lot, as much as I love this game, there are some things that are fluff and filler that I'm like, you could have kind of probably left that out and shaved off 30 minutes of this game, at least cutscene-wise, and it wouldn't have made a difference. To be honest,
I have no issue with her being Otacon's sister, but you don't have to give her that much. If you're going to kill her off, just have her be a one-dimensional character, strong character, a weak character, or whatever kind of thing, and then have Dispenser. You don't need to add depth to her and just add another layer of, okay, how many details do I have to memorize about this character now? And then none, because she's gone.
Exactly. I think they're trying to get an emotional connection from a female character, because there really wasn't one to kind of connect to. You dig with Meryl and Naomi, I believe, in the first one.
I don't remember Naomi. I remember Meryl, but I don't remember Naomi. Yeah. It's been 4 years since I played that game, though.
Don't worry, man. I got you. But yeah, you get these emotional connections and spoiler alert, if you haven't played Metal Gear Solid 1, number one, why are you listening to this episode? Number two, go listen to the episode that he did on it. You have the choice of Meryl dying or Otacon dying. And even though you have that choice in the storylines going forward, Meryl's dead. And I remember that being the first time in a video game that I was actually emotionally triggered by the death of a character.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think they were trying to kind of get you with Emma, I think her name is. It's M something.
It's Emma.
Emma. I think they're trying to get that with her, because they were telling you how, her father and her, almost drowned and her father didn't survive the accident. And for whatever reason, she felt like Hal betrayed her because he wasn't there and all this other stuff. So then all of a sudden, when they finally are about to see each other for the first time in over a decade, she gets stabbed and she doesn't really make it. And, like, all these, like, tiny little details, like, she wears glasses not because she needs a prescription, but because I think she wants to look like her brother because she always still wanted to speak to him, but for whatever reason, they never reconnected after the death of their father. I think that they just wanted kind of, like, more of, like, a feminine, like, connection like you had in the first game with a character to kind of play to not necessarily just, like, the female audience, but just kind of, like, this empathetic audience. And it didn't really grasp me in that way as much as the first one, which isn't, you know, it could for someone else, but just for me personally, it didn't. It was just one of those things that I could have taken it or left it. I loved the segment where you get to swim underwater. It was something, I mean, you could swim in the first one, but it wasn't like a major part of gameplay at all. This was like a nice, like a difference to kind of break up the running through from one like hub to another type deal, so that was fun. But beyond that, I was like, I don't care about his sister whatsoever.
I thought it was kind of weird. They also seemed like they set up a romantic relationship with her and Raiden, because he has a whole thing where she's too afraid to swim. He's like, here, just hold on to me and listen to my heartbeat. And I was just kind of like, is that necessary? Like, I don't know. It felt bizarrely romantic. Not sexual, just romantic. And I was just kind of like, why?
Yeah, I get what you're saying there. It was just kind of one of those things. And also, if I'm petrified of swimming, I'm not focusing on someone's heartbeat. I'm literally focusing on the fact that my eyes are shut and I'm being propelled underwater and I have no idea what's going on. So it's just sheer terror at that point.
I could, I would probably be in the same boat. Like, I don't know. It felt a little
forced.
I don't want to say forced. And also, just in general, the story, it was a little disjointed just because of how much information especially through exposition that he throws at you. Like, once again, the last third of the game is filled with probably two-thirds of the story. Like, it's just so condensed instead of getting it spaced out. Like, I like games. I mean, he had a lot of story to go through, to be fair, and I'm not saying I would have known how to spread that out a little bit better. Because, like, looking at how he structured the story, I don't see how he could have revealed half of that info beforehand without making the story interesting. But at the same time, like, is there a way to convey all that information and not overwhelm the player? I have no idea. I'm not a game designer, and if I was, I wouldn't be nearly as talented as Hideo Kojima is. But it's just
the same.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Sorry, a lot. Like, I look at that game and I'm just, I always get fascinated when I see, like, these iconic, whether it be a movie or a game or a character or whatever, I get really fascinated about the creation of it. Obviously, people get inspired by a million different things, but it's just like, you created this entire world, basically, of, it's very vast and it's very just creative beyond any level of creativity that I think I have. It's just, it explodes that into outer space. It's just crazy to me how they can just come up with stuff like that.
Especially, like, have you played his newest game, Death Stranding?
No, I have not. I've heard good things and I've heard bad things, and I want to play it, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
Well, I won't give you my opinion on it. I don't want to, like, put any, like, preconceived notions, good or bad, in let you kind of go into it. But I will say the world he creates is fascinating, and I don't mean that sarcastically. Like, there's a lot to it and it seems interesting.
Okay, I'm gonna keep that in mind. The only complaint I've heard about that game is just, like, the controls, really.
Yes, I would go into some more of my other stuff, but like I said, I want to hold off on that so that way you can go into it. There's good and bad things about it.
I'm sure.
But anyway, so to kind of wrap all this up, what are your final thoughts? Anything that we didn't get to talk about that you wanted to touch on? I guess the only thing if you need a moment to think, the one thing for me is, like, I thought the sound design in this was really good. I thought that all the gun, like all the gun sound effects, the footsteps, like there was a lot of just like the sound sounded really crisp and it felt really natural. And I thought that was really impressive for such an early PS2 game because it was only like a year after the PS2 came out.
You know, I mean, I totally agree with that. I think it took everything that you loved from the first one and kind of propelled it even more so to enjoy it. Because it, you know, it was fun in the first one to kind of troll the guards by like knocking on stuff and then kind of like running circles around them or having footprints in the snow. And mm-hmm. like you could do that even more in this game. And that was fun. It made everything, they made this game, like we talked about earlier, so interactive and so you're so immersed in the actual, you know, world that you're playing in. It's kind of seamless. I think we pretty much touched on everything like I would talk about in this game. I just always enjoyed it, even if I didn't even pay attention to the storyline. I loved the tiny little, you know, additives that you could do to like annoy Otacon. Like if, like this is a fun little like tidbit for those who go listen to this and then go play it maybe for the first time, is that you, as you know, Snake or whatever character that you're playing, you always get a camera to take pictures of stuff throughout. The tanker, there are pictures of like half naked women, and if you take mm-hmm. pictures of them and upload them to Hal towards the end of your tanker mission, because you have to take pictures of Metal Gear to prove that there is a Metal Gear on this, you know, freighter or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Hal gets really pissed. He's like, can you stop? Is this all you ever think about? Like, stop sending me this stuff. It's just like really funny shit. Like, you control these like AI things, and it's just, it's fun. Like the whole game, like every time I played it when I, you know, was younger, I found something new to do with it. And like with a game like that, it's just always endlessly fun that way.
I think the last little thing I just thought, I was looking through my notes again. The one fun fact to kind of end this on before we give all our, both of our plugs and whatnot. Raiden's name was slightly changed in the Japanese version. It was originally written in katakana, which, so quick Japanese lesson, very quick. There's two different alphabets in Japanese plus a whole like pictogram type of system. You have hiragana, which is for Japanese words. It's all the exact same sounds, but just completely different symbols for their two alphabets. So they have their full set of sounds, you know, in hiragana, and then those same set of sounds, the exact same set, but with different symbols in katakana. The reason why they differentiate, hiragana is for Japanese words, katakana is for foreign words. And originally they had written Raiden's name in katakana, but it could be confused since it would be pronounced like Raiden. It could be confused as Laden, and 9/11 had just happened.
Oh, yeah.
So they switched it to the kind of like, I don't know exactly how you describe it, but they switched to kanji. Kanji is just Chinese symbol. So instead of actually having a full alphabet, it's like pictographs, like it's representations type of thing.
Yeah.
So they switched that to kanji so that way you wouldn't get the confusion of Laden instead of Raiden. So
smart move.
That's an interesting little fun fact.
I like it.
So yeah, Erica, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. This was a ton of fun.
Oh yeah, thank you so much for finally having me on. We've been talking about this for a long ass time, man.
It's been a while. We've been talking about it for
years.
I was waiting for the right opportunity to jump in with that. So where can people find you on the internet if you want them to find you on the internet?
Sure, why not? As long as you're nice to me. If not, I'm going to be mean back. But no, I host two podcasts. I co-host one. If you're into true crime, I host the Apex and the Abyss. It's a true crime podcast. You can find it on all, you know, podcatchers. If not, let me know. I'll put it on there. You can find me at Apex and Abyss on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm all over the place. And same with Monster Madness, which is a horror pop culture show that I host with my husband and one of our best friends, Matt Stein. We basically just talk about monster movies and sometimes not even that much. We just ramble a lot and kind of bullshit. We play games. It's an enjoyable time. Actually, fun little fact for you little still loading listeners. Your host, Josh, came up with our game title, like what we call our game that we do almost every episode. So, yeah, there's connections everywhere. But, yeah, I'm on there. You can find us at Monster Madness on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're on the Slasher app, which is like a fun horror community app that you can get on your phone. I'm everywhere. You just search that. You'll find me, and we can chat.
All right. And as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to contact me, you can contact me through any of those avenues, or also StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. Also, my website, StillLoadingPodcast.com. There's a contact page on there. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. Rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use would be greatly appreciated. It helps spread awareness for the show. It helps spread the reach of it. And if you want to donate to the Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just a dollar a month will help the show grow. And most importantly, the foundation I am partnered with, the Bit by Bit Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video games consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals, which right now they could probably use. So if you want to check them out, it is bitbybitfoundation.org. And that should do... Oh, I do that every fucking time. I always say that should do it. And then I remember the podcast network I'm a part of. Check out podbeardnetwork.com and check out all the shows on the network. And that should do it. So Erica, sincerely, thank you again for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I will see you all next time.